I liked, as I was reading through one of the commentaries on Numbers 16, I really liked what one of them entitled it. They called it Authorized Personnel Only. And so I went online and I found pictures of people who were doing things that were completely and utterly unauthorized. They were not doing things correctly. So hopefully you'll enjoy these. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Again, I don't know if you can see him there. Do you see the guy? That is unauthorized personnel. I don't know if that guy understands what he is doing. That is just not the smart thing. How about this one? And by the way, if you ever want to look at more pictures like this, you can easily, all I typed in, if you've ever heard of them, they're called the Darwin Awards. So, you know, you kind of weed out, yeah, Darwin. Yeah, I love this one was this last year's winner. Look at it, they're flip-flops. Yeah, I love this. How about this guy, these guys? It's got shade. I guess that's why they did it. Yeah, yeah. How about this? Yeah, I don't know. How did they get it up there? I haven't quite figured that one out. How about this one? He's fixing his air conditioner. Do you see what he's... Now, what I want to know is the dude... So you got this poor guy up here, and he's holding him. And what is this guy doing? Oh, he's not helping out that much. He's waiting for the other person to fall, and it's going to be... He's going to grab his wallet as he goes to his death because he's not going to need it anymore. That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. How about this one? A forklift lifting up a forklift, lifting up another forklift. I do not think that OSHA was a part of this. It's people that don't know how to operate forklifts are like, hey, we could do this. Let's figure this out. I operated a forklift once and it was really fun. I almost crashed into it. It was awesome. And then this one, Mark Lehman. What do you think? Is that how we put up scaffolding? Maybe not. I love these two little chairs and. Yeah, it's got, and they don't even look, I mean, this one down here doesn't even look very flat. Like, it's going to go off at any time. And then I love this one. I don't know why.
Looks like Gene Roddenberry.
Gene Roddenberry? Oh, is a Star Trek dude? Yeah, here are all these guys in their hazmat suits, and this dude's like, hey, what up? Yeah. Now, so I decided for the fun of it, I posted that picture up on my Facebook page. Did all of you see that? I post up on my Facebook page, and then I ask for comments. And I think the way, captions. So, you know, there we go. Oh, even 29 minutes ago, someone is still commenting on it. So I said, help me out with sermon preparation. Give me your best caption to this picture. When then I had to go back and edit it, because I don't think people saw, I said, especially take notice that some dude in street clothes is hanging around guys in hazmat suits. So... some of the comments that came in were very religious in nature. So they were very, you know, under any situation, God is watching over this guy. That's good. No matter what you're doing, an angel is watching over you. You can't fix stupid. That one wasn't in that one. Putting on the full armor of God, nothing worldly can affect me. Yeah, so there's, someone put, I can do all things through Christ that strengthen me. Yeah, that would be a really terrible way to apply that, I think. So there were some religious ones, and then there were some other ones. So things like the suicidal photobombing, that was Justin's. Yeah, now Brandon had a long one. So the poor fool thought he was taking a picture with native Japanese. You can see by his facial expression that he just realized that he's pretty much bathing in radiation poisoning, so... Someone said, am I underdressed? There's so many of them. Oh, Emma commented, when diarrhea strikes, where will you be? Isn't that fantastic? Hazmat suits are for suckers. Fall into dung and come up smelling like roses. I know there's a body around here somewhere. I thought that one was good. Yeah. And then my favorite. And here we go. There was one that I liked the best, and it was from Lori Rumsey Moses, an old college friend. Uncle Hal before he caught Ebola. was fantastic. Rich, I was waiting for you to come up with something snarky to put on there. That was, you know, that you and Greg Nagel would have come up with some fantastic things. So, Greg Nagel's, I wouldn't be able to. It would be inappropriate, I'm sure. But I looked at this dude, and this is what came to mind when I thought about this authorized personnel only. Do we ever end up in situations where we just don't belong in there? Yeah, this happened when I was when my son Jacob first got into baseball. One of the things they had all of the dads and the coaches do is we had to become referees and umpires for baseball games. Now, let me tell you, when I'm on the sideline and watching, I am the best umpire ever. I can tell when someone gets a right call, when someone's terrible. I am really, really good. But something changes when all of a sudden I'm donning that little outfit, and then they put me behind the plate, and I had to do squats the whole game, you know, get down, and I'm calling stuff that I'd never even seen before. Weird plays show up. I always joked with Tyler. We had great stories, and I'm sure Joe, as a ref, you're always making perfect calls, and everyone else around you just doesn't know it. It's tough because these guys are experts. I'm not. I had such a hard time trying to figure out how to, because I don't know refereeing. I don't know umpiring. I know public speaking, and I know studying the Bible, but things like that, I have no clue. I even remember one time I went in, I was watching an eighth grade girls basketball game. After the game was over, they wanted to do like just a little scrimmage. And so one of the refs had to leave. And so the other ref, who was a friend, said, "Mark, jump in here and ref." And I'm like, "I don't think you want me to do that. That would be terrible and bad." This is what's happening in this chapter, chapter 16. It is at the height of the rebellion. It has now gotten so bad, and it's gotten bad before, right? We have gotten to the point where people were ready to kill Moses and Aaron. We have people picking up rocks. Someone's going to die in this whole thing. God comes in, tries to intervene, and does so in a way that I thought was pretty, he was pretty emphatic what he wanted. But there is one last major rebellion that takes place. And this one is so massive, the casualties of this particular rebellion are in the tens of thousands. So this wasn't something of some small magnitude. A lot of people ended up getting affected because they were unauthorized to do what they were supposed to be doing. So, Numbers chapter 16. So, okay, again, quick recap. We're still at the edge of the promised land. God said, "You ain't getting in." They said, "No, we'll do what you say." And then they rush in, and then they get killed, and they come back. And God's like, no, you have to go and walk around the Sinai Peninsula for 40 years, a year for every day that you explored the land. After the 40 years, then your kids are going to go into the promised land. So it's before they start these wanderings, there is this rebellion with Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. So Korah, son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and certain Reubenites, Dathan and Abiram, son of Eliab, and On, son of Peleth, became insolent and rose up against Moses. If you were a nerd like me, you would find out that the Kohathites and the Reubenites actually were in close proximity together every time they camped. So it's real simple. That's how rebellions often take place, or people who have nastiness. It's real easy to infect the people around you. If you become bitter and angry, let me tell you, it's so simple for everyone else to pick up on it. Heather and I had some friends in St. Louis, and we always had this issue. It was really weird. We'd go over to their house for dinner, and every time we went over to their house for dinner, we always got into fights, Heather and I. And we couldn't figure out why we would, every time we left their house, we were always angry at each other. We'd be very snippy. We'd be very insulting to one another. And we finally figured it out that this couple, that's all they did. You would walk into their house, and that's all they'd be doing is bickering. And if you've ever been around a couple that's bickering, what do you start doing? You just start bickering yourself. It is so simple. You just jump right into it. And we actually ended up with this particular couple. We told them that we were no longer available. We didn't tell them why. But Heather was really good friends with her and said, "Hey, you go hang out with her as much as you want." Because separately, they were very, very nice people. But that's what happens when you get into things like this. If you find yourself angry and upset all the time, maybe it's because of the people you're hanging out with. If you're in school and you're hanging around with some bad influence, that's the reason why your parents are always nagging on you of who you're hanging out with, because that actually affects who you are. But parents and adults, do you ever think about that? That's what's happening here. The Kohathites and these two Reubenites are together, and you could probably hear the gossip late at night with these guys. They don't like Moses. They don't like Aaron. And they start building such blown out of proportion things that their reality totally gets modified. You're going to see what they accuse Moses and Aaron of is totally and utterly 100% untrue, but in their minds, it's true. And that's what happens when you get around this type of mentality. So these guys, they're upset, and they, do you have a little text note on the word insolent, that's the last word of verse 1? Do you have a little text note? I know it's hard to read in here. We don't have extra lights. What does it say? Took men, yeah. It's this weird thing that what the original Hebrew says is that these three guys took something and rose up against Moses. And it's actually this interesting Hebrew mechanism where you don't know what it is that they took in order to cause this problem, which is why the NIV has thrown in, maybe that they took anger and so they became insolent. It's strange how they came up with it, but some people filled in that maybe they took men with them. I actually follow what one commentator said is there is a direct object that happens through the rest of this whole passage, and that is they took censers. They took the objects where you would fill them with fire and you would have smoke. Have you ever been to a hyper-Catholic church where they do the swinging of incense? Have you ever been to one of those? Yeah. I did. They actually had this at seminary one time. I got to be careful what I say. I went to chapel only once while I was in twice while I was in seminary. The first time, we're there, and sure enough, dude's walking down the middle, and he is swinging his incense at this Lutheran seminary, and I immediately started coughing. I don't know. I think I was allergic to the stuff. So I've actually experienced this. This is what they took, this holy object that was only designed for the priests, and there was a time in the past where two other guys thought that they would take some stuff, offer some holy fire to the Lord, and God struck them dead. So they should know these holy objects are super important. You just don't mess around with. There's certain things you are not designed to do. I am not designed to lead worship. Now, some of you may remember that actually about 6 years ago, do you remember this, Heather? Yeah, I decided for the fun of it, I was going to lead worship because I know what I'm doing. And so I got up there, and people to this day who remember that, I think have tried to block that memory out of their mind. It was so terrible, so horrendous. I do not belong behind a microphone unless I'm giving a sermon. I will not be singing in the worship band, no matter how good I am. Sydney and Sienna, you belong there. I don't belong there. You belong. There's certain things that you are designed to do, but we often have this weird mentality that we're going to try and do what God didn't design us to do in the first place. If you're always living in that way, you will always be frustrated. You will always be angry. You will never be fulfilled. What has God uniquely created you to do, and how do you then use that gift for the glory of God? That is an incredible lesson to learn. A lot of people don't learn that. They just want to do something because maybe it gets them up in front of people, or maybe it's of higher prestige. And Paul talks about this later on when he says, we were all created to be a part of the body. Some of us are going to have functions like being the uvula or the appendix or a toenail. And you're like, but I don't want to be a toenail. I want to be the brain. I'm sorry, you're just not that smart. I want to be the eyes. I'm sorry, Daisy. Did you want to be the brain? Okay, you can be the brain because you're smart and you're perfect. Yeah. It's like those, you know, the only reason why I often watched American Idol at the beginning was to watch the train wrecks, because these people have been told all their lives that they're good singers, and they're not. They're terrible singers. Why doesn't someone say, you know what, you should? And I do love it when the judges try to say that. They're like, you're not a singer. You should become a forklift operator, please. That would be more fantastic for you. These guys, Korah and the Kohathites, are not happy with what they're doing. Does anyone remember what the Kohathites were actually supposed to do within the tabernacle? I had to research it again myself. They were the ones that were actually responsible for the transportation of all this stuff. So they were responsible for transporting it, getting it there, but then you're not supposed to touch it afterwards. It was then only the priests. It's kind of like me. I helped set up the soundboard, but I will not touch the soundboard because I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with it. I'm touching it. This is what, Jason's going to come down and shoot me. This is what the Kohathites, they were responsible for handling these objects in the transportation, getting it set up, and then they were supposed to step away. And in fact, it was one of these things that God said, you're still going to have something really cool to do. You just can't go this far. And I know what happens to all of us. The moment that God tells us we can't do something, we somehow become stubborn and say we can't. That's what's happening with these Kohathites. So they take these censers and they rise up against Moses. With them were 250 Israelite men, well-known community leaders who had been appointed members of the council, which is problematic, isn't it? That 250 leaders are following along with this stepping into an arena that they shouldn't have been stepping into. But these guys were upset. They didn't want to be held back. They didn't want the ceiling put on them. They wanted to be able to do whatever they wanted to do. So they came as a group to oppose Moses and Aaron and said to them, you have gone too far. The whole community is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is with them. Why then do you set yourself above the Lord's assembly? All right, a couple of things. What did Aaron say to Moses just a couple chapters ago? The exact same thing. Like, well, who put you in charge, dude? You know, I'm older than you. Miriam, we're here. And remember that God came down and struck Miriam with leprosy. Isn't it interesting that the exact complaint that he has, that he had against Moses, now someone has against him? I guess this is that axiom, what goes around comes around type issue. But it is true. This is often how life works. So parents, how you treat your children is how they're going to turn out. Yeah. I one time met with a mom. A mom had brought me her daughter and said, my daughter is rude. She is nasty. She cusses me out. She is disrespectful to me as her mother. You need to put the fear of God into her. I'm like, well, okay. So I looked at the girl. I'm like, should you be doing this? I went to fourth commandment, honor your father and mother, and you know, you shouldn't be disrespectful. And we talked about it, and the girl kind of got the concept. And then I had to do one of the hardest things I ever had to do. I looked at the mom and I said, just out of curiosity, where'd she learn this behavior from? She goes, what do you mean? I go, well, I don't know. Have you ever cussed out your daughter? She goes, yeah. Have you ever been disrespectful to your daughter in front of all of her friends? Yeah. Have you ever screamed and yelled at her? Have you ever thrown things at her? Yeah. Why are you expecting her to turn out differently than you? This is that idea of even Paul later on talks about you reap what you sow. What you put in to other people, whether it's your husband or wife, whether it's your teachers at school or your friends or your classmates or your job, that's what you're going to get back. I find it interesting that Aaron, this guy who was very insolent at the beginning, ends up receiving a dosage of his own medicine. Oh, well, this is what you did to Moses, and now people are doing it to you. Why is that? Because Aaron was quite popular. He was probably the more charismatic between Moses and Aaron. Aaron was probably the better speaker, and he was probably much more well-liked. So people followed what he did. He rebelled against Moses, and now people are rebelling against him. I find that fascinating. I really do. And also... They make this accusation that the whole assembly is holy. Do you think Moses knows that? Has Moses done anything to somehow put the assembly down? No, do you remember the time when he actually got 70 elders and two of them were not present when the Holy Spirit showed up? And so then the two were just hanging out in their tents because they were lazy, because they were men. And then they have the Spirit of God. And then Joshua shows up and says, hey, these guys are doing stuff out of turn, out of order. And Moses said, are you kidding me? I'd love it if everyone was filled with the Holy Spirit. I'd love it if everyone became this. Even look backwards in chapter 15. Remember what we talked about with the tassels on the garments? What were the tassels on the garments significant for? They were saying, all of you are a holy priesthood, a holy nation. You are a kingdom of priests. So they're accusing Moses of stuff that he has never done. Did Moses aspire to be the leader of this group of a million or so people? No. I mean, the way he ascended into the leadership is one of the funniest stories around of, yeah, I don't think I want it, God. Thank you very much. And God says, no, you're going to do that. He goes, no, I'm not going to do it. Yeah, you're going to do it. No. And if you've ever argued with God, you realize you eventually lose. And that's when finally Aaron got set up as his mouthpiece. And Moses was thrust into a position he didn't want. But God wanted him there. He was authorized personnel. God said, I have created you for this position, whether you like it or not. And if God has created you for a position and you don't use that to the glory of God, it would be just as bad as you not having a gift and trying to exercise it for the glory of God. Some people say, well, fine, Mark, just don't ever become a worship leader again. Well, fabulous. Well, what happens if I didn't do what God called me to do? That would be just as bad. So you've got to ask yourself, what has God created me to do? How am I supposed to be living? How am I supposed to be giving my life in honor and glory to God? And if you're not doing it, that's just as bad as stepping into an area you're not supposed to be. You are authorized by God to be doing specific things. Figuring that out is important. So Moses didn't set himself up above the assembly. He was, as we saw before, the most humble man around. When Moses heard this, he does what Moses does. The number one action of Moses is every time something happens, he hits the ground. He falls on his face. And it doesn't say why he does this, but what it does infer is that he is not a fighter. Because I don't know about you, I am very belligerent. You can ask my wife if you want to know about that. If you come against me, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go right back at you. Is that what I should be doing? No. If I want to take a lesson from Moses, when people attack, am I spending time in prayer? Am I going, maybe there's something to this, or maybe I need to learn something, or maybe they're wrong, but it's not my place to sit there and argue with this. Maybe I need to learn what it just means to accept criticism from others. Is it the easiest thing to do? It's darn near one of the hardest things to do in my book. So when people attack, learning to pray, wouldn't that be interesting? You should try that with your spouse one of these days. So when your spouse gets, because my wife gets angry at me all the time because I'm an idiot. Next time she gets angry at me, I think what I'll do is I'll just start praying and see what happens. And she'll probably get angrier at me. I don't know. What would you do if I started doing that, babe? You would think I'm weird. But wouldn't that be freaky if kids started doing that with their parents? So next time, Jacob, I get mad at you, just start praying and see how I react. All right, Josh, you do that too. Fabulous. Daisy, you're going to do it too? All right, cool. So he hits the floor. Then he said to Korah and all his followers, in the morning the Lord will show who belongs to him and who is holy, and he will have that person come near him. The man he chooses, he will cause to come near him. You, Korah, and all your followers are to do this. Take the censers that you already grabbed, and tomorrow put fire and incense in them before the Lord. The man the Lord chooses will be the one who is holy. You Levites have gone too far. So he says, you know what? I'm not going to try and argue this with you. I'm just going to let God decide. God will be the deciding factor in this whole thing. If you want it, I'm sure Moses would have said, hey, if you want to lead this group, by all means, have at it. But God had not called that. So he says, you know what? We'll just let God decide. Whatever God decides is going to be the answer. So Moses also said to Korah, now listen, you Levites, isn't it enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the Israelite community and brought you near himself to do the work at the Lord's tabernacle and to stand before the community and minister to them? He has brought you and all your fellow Levites near him, but now you're trying to get into the priesthood too. It is against the Lord that you and your followers have banded together. Who is Aaron that you should grumble against him? So he's trying to let him know, look at what God has given you. That to me is the quickest way to be satisfied with your life, is to stop looking at what everyone else has and start looking at what you've got. Because when you start looking at the blessings that God has already given you, you realize, wow, look at what I can do. Look at what I already have. I need to learn what it means to be content in those situations. And you're going to find out quickly that when you do that, you're going to move from being whiners to worshipers. That is the fastest way. I think it's really the only way. Saying, what has God already given me? What am I already allowed to do? Am I even operating in that gift? Again, I've met a lot of people that they say, well, I want to do this, 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 or this, and God's uniquely designed them to do something else. I go, well, have you done that? Because you have a real gift for that. And they're like, no, I don't want to. Why don't you start there and then watch what God does? First of all, you'll be happier. Secondly, you're not going to be frustrated. You're going to be part of a body that is uniquely designed to accomplish everything that needs to be accomplished. So stop looking at what you don't have. Because I don't have a lot of things, right? I don't have a yacht. I don't have a mansion. I don't have $1 million. I don't have unlimited resources to go to Starbucks. But what do I have? I have a lot of things. First and foremost, I have my faith, which draws me close to God. I've got a beautiful wife. That was good points, huh, babe? That was good points. I've got 3 kids that are awesome. I got a great church. I got great friends. I could whine about all the things I don't have, but when I look at all that I do have, I've got to be one of the most blessed people around. And that's what changes people. Yeah, if Korah and his followers would have said, man, look at what we can do, man. We get to hold this stuff. We get to carry this stuff. Okay, we don't get to use it per se, but we're constantly around God. What a wonderful thing. Verse 12, then Moses summoned Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, but they said, we will not come. Sounds like a bunch of brats. Isn't it enough that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the desert? They came up out of Egypt. Was that a land flowing with milk and honey? No. No, it was the land of slavery. Yeah. And now you also want to lord it over us. Moreover, you haven't brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey or given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. I wrote this in my Bible. I'm like, is that Moses' fault? They're complaining, Moses, you didn't take us into the promised land. Was that up to Moses? No, it was their whining, it was their complaining, it was their grumbling. They're getting exactly what they wanted, and now they're whining and complaining because they're getting what they wanted. It's an interesting thing, but I laugh at them, but then I quickly laugh at myself because I often do very similar things. And then they throw in this phrase, will you gouge out the eyes of these men? And that really troubled me. I was really curious, like, what did that mean? I can only come up with one solution, and that was earlier in the book of Numbers, it actually says, when after they've rebelled against not going into the promised land, God says, not one of the men who saw my glory and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the desert, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their forefathers. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. Twice it talks about seeing it. Did they misinterpret this to the point that they're like, what, are you going to gouge out our eyes so we can't see it? Again, they take what God has said, they twist it around, and that's exactly how bad things happen. When you take God's word, twist it for your own purposes, watch out. Not a good thing to do. So these guys are upset that they're not going into the promised land, even though they were the ones that prevented it from happening. So then Moses became very angry and said to the Lord, do not accept their offering. I have not taken so much as a donkey from them, nor have I wronged any of them. Moses said to Korah, you and all your followers are to appear before the Lord tomorrow, you and they and Aaron. So the question is going to be a showdown. Who is the high priest? Is it Aaron or is it Korah? That's the big question before us. Each man is to take a censer and put incense in it, 250 censers in all, and present it before the Lord. So he says, look, you can bring all 250 of your guys, and it'll be Aaron. You and Aaron are to present your censers also. So each man took a censer, put fire and incense in it, and stood with Moses and Aaron at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Out of curiosity, how do you think this thing's going to end? poorly. Yeah, this is not going to end well. Because that's what happened. When you are unauthorized, when you want to do stuff that is outside how God created you to be, and how dare you if God created you to be someone and you are not that person. Yeah. When Korah had gathered, verse 19, when Korah had gathered all his followers in opposition to them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, the glory of the Lord appeared to the entire assembly. Yeah, God showed up. Oh, man. I don't know if these guys were scared or if they were just so utterly confident that God had chosen. I don't know. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Separate yourselves from the assembly so I can put an end to them at once." Yeah, it doesn't sound good, does it? Yeah, we'll put an end to them. And what did Moses and Aaron do? They're like, "God, strike them dead." No. Which is what I would have said. Right? You come against me, man, if I could call down fire on you, man, that would be awesome. No one would dare mess with me anymore, right? Yeah. I got to learn. Again, Moses and Aaron, very interesting because they are so quick to say, you know what, let God handle it. This is an important lesson, right? This is the whole concept of revenge, right? Is it up to us to seek revenge? Is it up to us to lash back?
Just get even.
Yeah. We often say, let's just get even. But God says, that's my job. And so that's what Moses and Aaron do. It's amazing that Aaron has figured this out too. "Oh God, God of the spirits of all mankind, will you be angry with the entire assembly when only one man sins?" Then the Lord said to Moses, "Say to the assembly, move away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram." Right? Why move away from their tents? Yeah. You distance yourself. Do you ever find that this is a balancing act? What happens if all you hung around were Christians all day long? It's easy, yeah. And you'd be the most ineffective missionary around. What happens if all you hang around with are non-Christians? Then you fall into other things. There's this balance that we strike of we align ourselves with people that give us the strength, but then we always need to be out as missionaries. But we always got to be careful that we don't slip up or step into the very things that could trip us up. Right? And this is why, you know, kid wants to go to a raging party that has alcohol and drugs? No, but I can preach to him. No, you can't. Yeah, I could just see that. Yeah, let me preach to you while you're drinking your Bud Light. That you're not going to be able to do that. You've got to always watch who is influencing you. And for them, they said, it's time for us to move away because these people, unfortunately, have no redeeming quality of getting you closer to God. It's always a danger, but always do it in balance, right? Don't become a monk or hermit, but be around others so that you might have an influence on them. Oh, crud, where am I at? Oh, there we go. Holy cow, we got a lot to go. Don't worry, I'm going to get through this stuff. Moses got up and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. He warned the assembly, "Move back from the tents of these wicked men. Do not touch anything belonging to them, or you will be swept away because of all your sins." So they moved away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Dathan and Abiram had come out. Sorry, this is going to be hard, just to let you know. They had come out and were standing with their wives, children, and little ones at the entrances of the tents. Then Moses said, "This is how you will know that the Lord has sent me to do all these things and that it was not my idea. If these men die a natural death and experience only what usually happens to men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about something totally new and the earth open up its mouth and swallows them with everything that belongs to them and they go down alive into the grave, then you will know that these men have treated the Lord with contempt." Is that the craziest fleece you've ever heard? Like, I would be like, "Lord, if they breathe in the next 3 seconds, then you have not sent them." That'd be an easy way to ensure that you're right. He says, "Look, I'll only be right if an earthquake happens at this very moment and the earth opens up and they fall down into it." It's kind of the craziest challenge thrown out there. Moses is saying, this way, you're never going to be questioning whether or not I created this or it was some natural explanation. We're going to throw something so crazy out there, this is what's going to happen. And as soon as he finished saying this, the ground under them split apart, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them with their households and all Korah's men and all their possessions, they went down alive into the grave with everything they owned. The earth closed over them, and they perished and were gone from the community. At their cries, all the Israelites around them fled, shouting, "The earth is going to swallow us too." And I know what you're thinking right off the bat. I mean, it's the first thing I was thinking too, which is, wait, the wives and the children died too? Right? It's one of these things, because right after I read that, my first reaction was, that doesn't sound right to me, and that doesn't quite seem fair. But I was reminded of something as I kept studying this over and over again, that it happens quite frequently. When you make choices, it affects the people around you. Is this God's issue? Or was it the sin of these men essentially destroyed their own families? Did the families have the opportunity to walk away? Did they have the opportunity to distance themselves from wrong stuff? And they didn't. And I know my first initial reaction was to blame God, and I realized afterwards my reaction really should be is to blame Korah. And it was his choice. But it's a sobering thought, right? Actions that you take affect the people around you. Some of them to the point that it could be extremely damaging to them. It's a reminder, again, kids are watching, our own kids, other people's kids are watching us. Teenagers, youth are watching you. They want to know. I mean, you claim to be a Christian and then you go and do stuff. How's that witness looking? Could that witness affect other people's eternal salvation? These are the types of things that we need to be thinking of, why we live our lives the way we do. Hopefully not to bring any glory to ourselves, because that would be ridiculous and dumb, but it's only because we want to be the good examples, because that is hugely impactful to the people that are watching us. People are watching you. They're watching me. I know this for a fact. People scrutinize every little thing that's said or done. And can I live my life in such a way that nothing can be said about me because I'm living it for the glory of God? Oh, all right. Sadly, this is not where the bad stuff ends. Verse 35, and fire came out of the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense. By the way, out of curiosity, does God like striking wicked people dead? We sometimes think that, like, you know, hey, God's like, I'm so angry at you, smoke, you know. Is God pleased when he destroys wicked people? Yeah, it was very helpful. I read this in a commentary, and this, again, the character of God, Isaiah 28. The Lord will rise up as he did against Mount Perazim. He will arouse himself as in the Valley of Gibeon. And it's talking about wrathful situations where God had to act to do his work, his strange work, and perform his task, his alien task. What that means is that is not God's desire at all. In fact, it is so opposite of the character of God that it has to get so bad that something like that has to happen. So never, ever think again that God is some angry, vengeful, vindictive God that just wants to come down and take people out. He hates it. It is not something that he enjoys doing. But if he has to for the salvation of other people, then he will act and operate. He will allow innocent people to die if it means that it'll save someone else. He will allow his own son, the most innocent man around, to die because of that action, we are saved. That's the character of God. Never forget that, especially when we read these things. The worst has not yet happened. There's even more. The Lord said to Moses, take Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, to take the censers out of the smoldering remains and scatter the coals some distance, for the censers are holy, the censers of the men who have sinned at the cost of their lives. Hammer the censers into sheets to overlay the altar, for they were presented before the Lord and had become holy. Let them be a sign to the Israelites. So Eleazar the priest collected the bronze censers brought by those who had been burned up, and he had them hammered out to overlay the altar as the Lord directed him through Moses. This was to remind the Israelites that no one except a descendant of Aaron should come to burn incense before the Lord, or he would become like Korah and his followers. It's a reminder. It's like God put up the sign, authorized personnel only. It's important. The next day, the whole Israelite community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. Holy smokes, really? Again. When will they learn? I wish I knew the answer to that. When will I learn? You have killed the Lord's people, they said. But when the assembly gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron and turned toward the tent of meeting, suddenly the cloud covered it and God showed up again. Ooh. Then Moses and Aaron went to the front of the tent of meeting, and the Lord said to Moses, get away from the assembly so I can put an end to them at once. And they fell face down. So God's like, okay, that's it. I'm done. They're all crying and complaining. I'm just going to smoke them all. Then Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and put incense in it along with fire from the altar and hurry to the assembly to make atonement for them. What? Moses and Aaron say, you know what? We need to pray for them. We need to ask God for forgiveness on their behalf. Is that the height of spiritual maturity? To be able to pray for someone who hates you and wants you dead and doesn't care anything about you? Are we able to then pray for them? Say, Lord, forgive them? Is this not exactly the words that Jesus used hanging on the cross? Lord, forgive them? Oh. I'm impressed by these guys. I really am. I know that Moses and Aaron are you know, the height of everything, and they sometimes make mistakes, but wow. The fact that they are praying for them, and they're grabbing the incense, and they're swinging this around. Yeah, 46. And Moses said to Aaron, take your incense to make atonement for them. Wrath has come out from the Lord. The plague has started. So Aaron did as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly. The plague had already started among the people, but Aaron offered incense and made atonement for them. He stood between the living and the dead, and the plague stopped. But 14,700 people died from the plague, in addition to those who died because of Korah. Then Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance to the tent of meeting, for the plague had stopped. So they actually stood between the living. They're stopping this plague that's happening. What I'm interested in is this next thing. Oh, I didn't put it up there. Darn it. Numbers 26:11 says, Korah's line was not shut down. You would think that Korah and all of his family died, but not all of them did. There, somehow in this whole thing, there were people that survived. And later on, they actually became psalm writers. So do it with me here. Just grab, turn to Psalms right in the middle. Let's just flip through a couple. Go to Psalm 42. And we're just going to go through some of these headings. Psalm 42. For the director of music, a maskil of the sons of Korah. Flip to 44. For the director of music of the sons of Korah. How about 45? How about 46? How about 47? How about 48? How about 49? How about 84? How about 85? How about 87? How about 88? All of those psalms were written by them. I found this one, and this is the one that shocked me. From this rebellious line, Psalm 84. For the director of music, according to Gittith, of the sons of Korah, a psalm. How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord Almighty. My soul yearns. It even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Skipping forward to verse 10. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. Does that make that psalm a little bit different? They came from this man, this rebellious man, and they learned something. You know what? I would rather be a slave in God's house than a rich man amongst the wicked. I would rather be in God's house one day than 1,000 elsewhere. And yeah, I'm sorry. And then it continues, the Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those whose walk is blameless, O Lord Almighty. Blessed is the man who trusts in you. And I know you probably got it in your head right now, right? That song. Yes, I was quick enough to alert Dave and say, help me out. And we switched the songs at the last moment. And that's the song we'll be singing up next. Because you can go from being a whiner to a worshiper. You can go from being critical about everything around you and everybody around you and be saying, Lord, I'm thankful for what you've done in my life. And you can become a full-fledged worshiper that way. That is what God desires from us. Let's pray. Lord, we are good at whining. Wow, we are good at complaining. And we're good at letting everyone know how upset we are. We are good at criticizing others. We're good at criticizing those referees who make horrible calls at the football games or at the baseball games. We're good at criticizing other people's jobs. I'm really good at criticizing President, Lord, because, you know, I know how easy it would be to be in that position. I'm so good at being that way when really I need to be praying for people. I need to be loving other people. I need to be interceding on their behalf. And I pray that you would give us your spirit. Give us your heart that says that our goal is to worship you, not to whine, not to criticize, not to complain, but to be humble and say, better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. Amen.